Right, thank you very much for your patience, everybody, and welcome to the final stage of today's marathon run through the world of food sovereignty. My name is John Hillary. I'm the Executive Director of War on Want, and I'm really thrilled to see so many people here this evening. For those of you who have been here in the earlier two sessions of the day, the seminar this morning and then the meeting of the All-Party Parliamentary Group, you'll know that the main theme of today is building the movement for food sovereignty, both in the UK but also linked into the food sovereignty movement around the world. And I hope that all of you have got a copy of the War on Want report, which if you didn't get this morning or this afternoon, you will find copies of over there on the desk. This is our attempt really to situate the problem of food and the food system squarely as a political issue. And I'm really pleased that we're being able to meet here in Parliament. And I'd like to just say a quick thank you to two of our hosts, Rob Flo and Sue Miller, who are both the co-chairs of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Agroecology. Lewis from Mozambique said this morning it would already be something quite amazing in Mozambique if we were having a meeting on food sovereignty in Parliament. And I think we shouldn't take for granted the fact that we have been able to have this meeting here today. So I'd like to say a big thank you to Sue and to Rob for making that possible. Before we start, please. They have both asked me to actually pass on their apologies in advance because they both have votes which are going on in the House of Lords and the House of Commons this evening. So they will have to depart and hopefully come back and maybe depart and maybe not come back in order to take part in the democratic life of our country, so to speak. That will also mean that Rob is going to speak immediately after me. I just want to say two very, very quick things to start off. War on Want is really proud to be able to stand in an international movement, a global movement for food sovereignty. And the partners that we work with in the Global South, in the farmers' movements, the peasants' movements, the landless workers' movements, are really the strength of all of the work we do. And you'll see in the report which we've got here some really inspiring stories of where the principles of food sovereignty are being put into practice, and you can see that when you read the report. But even better, we actually have the first-hand testimony of the partners who you can see around me here. And that is a really unique opportunity for you and for us to hear directly from them. So I'm really excited because to have this type of a panel is a real, real treat. The final thing I was going to say is also that we want to build this movement with all of you. And we would really love it if you would join War on Want in building this food sovereignty movement. There are black leaflets over there on the way out. Please make sure, if you haven't already picked up one of these, that you do pick it up and that you consider joining us. We can only build the movement with as many people as we can engage in the fight for this, for food sovereignty. We see this as a political struggle. We see the problems of the food system are political problems as a result of choices made by political elites. The only way you can challenge, contest that power is through building a movement of ordinary people. And that ordinary people movement is you and us and all of us together. So please consider joining War on Want when you've picked up this and if you like any of the things that you've heard this evening and for the rest of the day. Right, I'm going to start first of all by vacating my chair in favour of Rob Fuller, who is one of the co-chairs of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Agroecology, so he can just kick us off before he has to go to vote. So please give him a warm welcome. Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed. And for those of you who've already put up with me for 2 hours this afternoon, my apologies, I'm here again talking to you once more. But I wanted just to take a couple of minutes. First of all, to begin by thanking War on Want. I had the fantastic privilege of going out to Maputo in Mozambique to meeting Lewis and his colleagues, his compatriots, his fellow travellers on the journey with UNAC, and meeting some wonderful people out in the field, literally, and seeing what happened there. And it's one of those sort of moments where you think, all the sort of theory, all the discussions, all the papers that you read, that's when it becomes real. That's when you actually see how knowledge can be used. That's where you see in a meeting with a senior civil servant in the government of Mozambique that actually they know the answers but are looking in the wrong direction. That's where you actually see that the reality of the situation is that all the problems we have, the solution has to be a political one. Because the fantastic work that UNAC do, the fantastic work that War on Want do, the fantastic work that's done across the globe by organisations of a similar nature, will only achieve small things initially, but can only grow those really by sort of moving on. And I keep using words like grow, but I'm going to kind of use the analogy really of, you know, if you want to have that fantastic crop, if you want to be able to sort of harvest it and get it in and actually do something with it, whether it's harvesting a crop of tomatoes that I saw and then being able to take them to market, whether it's whatever the crop is in the real terms, whether it's potatoes, we saw a potato farmer. You've got to start at the level of preparing the soil. And I think that's what meetings like this do. They prepare the political soil. The next stage, obviously, and you know, there are far better qualified people in the room, I'm sure, than me to sort of continue this analogy, but having prepared this soil, we've got to then go out politically and make sure that there are the seeds of change out there that can be nurtured by organisations like War on Want, that can be brought forward and actually make that difference. Because otherwise, we'll be sitting here in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, in 20 years' time, and I don't want to be in that place. I don't want to still be having this conversation when I'm even greyer than I am already. I don't want to be having a situation where I'm meeting Lewis's children and grandchildren and saying to them, oh, I'm really sorry that it worked out, that actually the government were more interested in importing fertiliser than they were in putting roads in. Mm-hmm. These are the sort of things that we have to change. And you know, all around us at the moment, we see that change starting to sort of come through, whether it's the 99% movement, whether it's people actually just saying, you know what, I'm fed up of buying a product, as they're described, I'm fed up of buying a piece of meat that actually is tasteless, it's pointless. And when I start to dig into where that's come from, actually I don't like the chain that sits behind it, what's actually led to this production. Or actually I don't like the fact that a product I'm buying is being farmed by a land grab, and you know that as a result of that land grab, farmers are being put off their land, dispossessed, and they're now spending, I think somebody made the point this afternoon, you're spending 15 hours in the sun, using their labour, trading their labour, because they've given up the land, they've gone into the cities, and it's not only is it no better, it's far worse. So we've got to use this opportunity. We've got to take that challenge that's there. You know, the land is prepared, the seeds are ready, let's go out and get on with it. Because if we don't, then actually we probably won't be sitting here in 20 years' time, because actually the calamity that is looming on that horizon will have hit us and we'll be trying to sort of pick up the pieces of it. So thank you again to War on Want. Thank you to all those people I met, down to the fantastic Kenyan guy who was there as a volunteer showing how to do different farming techniques on that piece of land some miles out of Maputo. Thank you to everybody who is making this journey with me, and I'm making it with you. But let's make sure we know where we're heading to, and let's get on with it, and let's make sure it is political at every single level. So thanks very much. My apologies, I'm going to have to scoot off in about a quarter of an hour or so. There are votes, but there's also, I'm afraid, one of those situations where the diary is that full of different things that I'm supposed to be at that you kind of tear your hair out in despair. But let's make sure we kind of work together in one voice, pulling in one direction. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Rob. Now, without further ado, let's move on to one of the speakers who has had to travel rather farther than the rest of us to get here today. I'm really, really pleased to be able to introduce Sara Fernando, who is the National Coordinator of MONLAR, which is the Movement for National Land and Agrarian Reform in Sri Lanka. And we're going to try and get this. Okay, we'll see if one of these extends. Well, maybe if Sara from Sue can change seats, maybe?
Yes, how about that's better.
MONLAR has been really at the forefront of the agroecological revolution in Sri Lanka, and I think it's going to be fascinating to hear what Sara has to say about that. But also, again, in this political challenge, when after the tsunami, I hope I'm not going to be stealing any of his thunder here, but after the tsunami in Sri Lanka, when you had the whole of the East Coast which had been ravaged, the government immediately said this is a great opportunity now for tourism. And all of the people who thought, yeah, this is a great opportunity to re-establish community-based organic farming were told, no, this is now going to be a tourism venture. And so I think the political challenge which MONLAR has mounted towards such big schemes is also another really important part of that fight. So could you please welcome, now that we have them in the correct seats, Sara Fernando.
Thank you very much. I thank Warren Bond very sincerely for inviting us to be part of this process. Food sovereignty is very simple. I think we are making it far too complicated by bringing too many complicated matters into the discussion. What is food sovereignty? Food sovereignty simply is the ability of people and the right of people to utilize nature's resources, all given to us free of charge, allow nature to produce food for all human beings, all animals, and all plants and trees. I would say that is food sovereignty. How do we do it? I will only largely use Sri Lankan examples to show how it is done and how easy it is and how practical it is. We have plenty of sunlight, enough sunlight throughout the year. And this sunlight is given to us free. We maximize the use of sunlight by having as many trees as possible, growing into different canopies, short-term crops, long-term crops, as diversely as possible. The other important thing is, you have to allow soil to work for you, or soil to survive. Now, soil survives through microbial activity. And if you destroy microbes, earthworms and microbes and other tiny animals who are in millions and billions, who work day and night, free of charge, making your soil fertile, then you are not doing agriculture. Now that is what modern agriculture is trying to do. Using weedicides, accelerating soil erosion and so on. So you have to begin your work by preventing soil erosion. Now in Sri Lanka, the small farmers who have very small plots of land, in fact many of the farmers, large majority of farmers have very small tiny plots of land. The average land holding would be about 0.2 of a hectare, or maybe little more than that. Many of them have less than 1 acre of land. Now, if your land, soil gets eroded, then you lose your topsoil, you lose your microbial activity that makes your soil fertile. So preventing erosion is essential. How do we do it? Making simple ridges if the land is sloping and ridges. Then you have to mulch your land, you have to cover your land to the maximum possible, utilizing decaying organic matter that provides food to the microbes to make your soil fertile. You have to allow insects to work. If you use chemical pesticides to kill insects, you kill all insects, but the remaining insects that damage your crop have their food, therefore they thrive. So therefore, using chemical pesticides or killing your insects should be prevented. The other important thing is, do away with monocultures. If you do single crop over a large land area, any disease, any natural effect will destroy your crop completely. You have insect disasters. Now, if you allow nature to work, nature has its own way of controlling the pests using predators. Now, in our field, in any country, maybe in tropical countries even more, the friendly insects are much more in number than the unfriendly insects. So if you don't kill them, they control your crop and prevent diseases. So therefore, diversity is essential. Recycling is another essential aspect. When you take from nature, give back to nature maximum that you have taken back, so that it recycles. Now, this is another simple thing that people have to do. If you look at a small farmer doing this, it's very simple. It's completely simple. It costs you nothing. It's much less labor than any other type of farming. It's much less expensive than any other type of farming. We have learned about a few years ago from a Indian farmer scientist Subhash Palekar, who has experimented and worked out a simple way of doing farming, and he calls it zero budget natural farming. Now, he doesn't spend a cent, he only uses all these ecological principles that don't cost you money. Sunlight doesn't send you a bill at the end of the month. Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere doesn't charge. Moisture in the soil doesn't send you a bill. So therefore, it's all given free. In addition to this, Mr. Subhash Palekar, in his zero budget natural farming, which we are now adopting, he used a way of enhancing the microbial activity. He uses a mixture called Jeevamusta. He uses cow dung. Dung of indigenous cows is much better because microbial activity is much more supported by that kind of cow urine, pulse powder in certain quantities, jaggery, sweeten or provide food to the microbes. If jaggery is expensive, you can also use coconut water, handful of soil from a place where there is humus soil having microbes in it, mix it with a certain quantity of water, 200 liters, just allow it to ferment for 2 days and use that liquid in the root area of the plant. And we have done this and we have seen that it gives tremendous increase in results. So Mr. Subhash Palekar works with 4 million farmers in India who are using that method of farming. It doesn't cost you anything, therefore he calls it zero budget natural farming. So what I want to say, the first point I want to make is that agriculture can be very easy, very cost effective, very productive, utilizing natural methods. The second important thing is, who are the people who can do this? When we are talking of food sovereignty, we are talking of the right of people to decide on the agriculture. You have to be very clear on this. If you are doing agriculture to make maximum profits, then you will be extracting from soil, extracting from environment, extracting from natural resources, extracting from human labor to make your profits. That will not be sustainable, that is not ecological. Therefore, people who are able to do this are people who are not looking for profit but looking for survival. Now, do they have enough power? As it was mentioned now, this is a political issue. Do small farmers, the rural people, the indigenous people, the landless people, the women, and so on, do they have enough power to bring about this transformation? I say yes, because they are in much, much large numbers. Now, since they have no capital for investment, they have to count on nature's free gifts. Therefore, they understand this message very well. It's taken up with great interest. You have to carry that message across to people. I am saying this very confidently because of Sri Lankan experience and because of growing experiences all over the world. I will just say a few things about Sri Lankan experiences. MONLA, my own organization, Movement for Land and Agriculture Reform, has worked in Sri Lanka for the last 20 years. These are 21st year. Now, during this period, we have worked with many other organizations. We have found, in 2008, we did a survey and found that there were 532 organizations, NGOs, farm organizations, women's organizations, and so on, environmental organizations, who were engaged in some form of ecological agriculture. They have the expertise. They know how to do it. Therefore, this can be done. This can be done very easily. The last point I want to make is, as far as Sri Lanka is concerned, there is no other way. There is no other way of feeding our people. There is far too much malnutrition and hunger in the country. This can be overcome very easily if you allow people to work with nature to help nature to give you food. So that's what is possible. Fortunately, or unfortunately, I don't know, the government has recently declared some programs, rural development programs, poverty alleviation programs, where they say that they will help people to build 4 million home guards. Now, they counted this 4 million by dividing the population by 5, saying that each family will have to do their own home guard, produce their own food. But they are depending on chemical companies, agribusiness companies, therefore they are doing it in the wrong way. So we are campaigning in Sri Lanka to get the government to accept this and do it in the right way. Right? Therefore, this is possible. Just give me one other point. Now, the world is beginning to recognize the importance of this. United Nations Special Rapporteur for Food Rights, Olivier De Schutter, made a statement in the United States Human Rights Council saying that agroecology is the way to overcome the problem of hunger. The world leaders have failed and failed and failed. They failed in the Millennium Development Goals. Number of hungry people have increased. Similarly, they are failing in the climate issue, the global warming issue, and this is one way in which the climate problem can be overcome. In Sri Lanka, we are very confident that we can convert all our villages into forests and live in the forest, growing in the home garden. This is quite possible. Lastly, we have over 1 million plantation workers. I'm talking in United Kingdom, the British. They cleared all the hills in the top of the country. Hill country was all denuded to grow tea. Therefore, there have been over 150 years of continuous erosion. Every rainy season we have floods, earth slips. Every dry season we have droughts. These have been created by this destruction of forests, and this destruction of forests has continued. We say that these plantation workers have a right to claim the land where they are working, and they can do much better agriculture and make productivity much more, not growing tea, but growing ecological mixed farming in the hill country and creating more forests. Now that is the main source of water for the whole country. I don't have time to describe this to you, but ill health has become a tremendous problem in the country. Arsenic poison has become a serious issue in some parts of the country. Other diseases, mosquito diseases, diabetes, blood pressure, and all kinds of diseases are very widespread. Therefore, this is the way in which most of our problems can be solved, and I think many other countries can adopt this. I don't know to talk about the Western countries, the European countries where you have winters and so on. This is an area that you have to research. Can you convert your land into smaller plots where human beings can work with nature and recreate, regenerate? We call this healing the earth. If we heal the earth, we have killed the earth, we are killing the earth. Stop killing the earth, restore regeneration, heal the earth, and the earth will look after human beings and other animals. Thank you very much.
Sarah, thank you very much. I think what you said was, as you put it, simple, but also very profound, and also a very good challenge for us here in Britain. The plan had been seamlessly to move from Sarah to Baroness Sue Miller, because she actually went to visit Monla in Sri Lanka earlier this year. But as you will see from the screens around you when you were looking before, there's been a division down in the House of Lords, so she's had to go and vote. So it's my great pleasure instead to be able to pass straight on to Helen Yeager, who some of you from this morning will have heard already talking in relation to social peace within food sovereignty. Helen is the National Secretary of Ngoma Farmers Campaign in Kenya, and I know if you heard her speaking this morning, you will be as keen as I am to hear what she has to say now on food sovereignty. Helen, over to you.